Welcome to the Perfectly Sane Show, episode 670. I am Chris, as always, joined by Tony.
Guys, I hope to be so toxically mediocre at my job that somebody will pay me $85 million to leave. Russell Wilson, let's ride.
That's so many people when you think about it.
People are like, oh, he's a failure. That is not failure. That is the most epically wonderful success. You're literally getting $85 million to do fuck all for the rest of your life. Yeah. It's like one of those, like, would you give up sex for a year for $80 million? And he's like, sure. And that's what happened.
Would you give up playing football under this contract if we just gave you $85 million to go away? Okay.
All right, fine. Bye.
And he can now sign with another team, right?
But like, why would he? Why? Why would you do this? He's after being rejected by two, like, legendary coaches. Just like, somebody else is going to pick you up and be like, oh, yeah, you're good. Lead my team. It's not happening.
Yeah. I mean, really, he should just take his $85 million and ride on his horse.
It's going to be now leading your Atlanta Falcons or some, like, shitty team.
Yep. Earl is here as well.
And I would just like to say that, you know, I think it's time that we kind of call in the National Guard and NYPD to police this podcast. You folks are getting rowdy and out of hand. And I think that's a very, very cool comment this week. But
it's because we didn't pay our $2 when we turned on to the podcast.
It is insane that, like, we're doing all in half of $2.90. You're paying a lot more to make sure people don't skip out on paying $2.90. It is a terrible state of affairs. I'm just laughing through the pain because there is no goddamn reason we should have thousands of armed forces in the subway system.
You could literally make the subway free for the price you're paying for all these guys you have policing it so that it's not free.
Yes.
I have somehow missed this. Is the National Guard policing the subways in New York?
The governor called out the National Guard. Was it yesterday?
Yeah.
Or the day before?
Yes.
To make sure people are paying?
Well, it was also, I mean, the cover for everything in this country, it's to, you know, deter violent crimes.
Oh.
Apparently there's been like three crimes, major crimes on the subway this year. So it's a national emergency now.
Mm.
And I mean, I'm not saying that it's not awful, but I'm also saying we have cops in the police station now, and that didn't prevent the three crimes. Because the problem is, they're not stationed on the trains. They're stationed on the platform. And not even that, it's the time they're stationed before, because the big part of it is, like, they make sure people are paying that $2.90 to get into the subway system.
Yeah, because,
well, you know, like, who's available now to come and fix that problem? Russell Wilson.
I mean, he could do whatever he wants now. He has so much free time, so.
He's got $85 million. He could help pay the fares of the people who have
to. He could pay the fares for a lot of people.
And Jeff is here as well.
Sorry, I don't have any ultra-specific regional or sports-related intro for you.
Boring!
That's fair, Jeff. It's fine. Not all of us can have insanity going on in our subway system.
Well, I got insanity for you, but keep it in check. I'm trying.
Before we move into the games and stuff, we do just want to touch on the fact that Florida hates tourists. Did write that down here.
Especially yeah, I did see the story.
In Miami, where they want to stop spring break. So
they're like closing like garages. They're putting out like PSAs, don't come.
And people are still going anyway. So
they will be there anyway. I mean, the people who like this is for aren't paying attention to you doing this.
Right.
They don't care.
So, but in terms of games, Princess Peach Showtime had a demo that came out this week. That is a game that I think all of us have looked at and gone, what the hell is this thing?
I think everyone did, which is why they put out a demo.
Yeah.
To be fair, they never really showed it earlier, and I think it was just hard to kind of connect the dots. So yes, I wish the demo was a bit more meaty. It's only two stages. So I wish they, because I think the demo the press got to play was like four or five, so you got to do different abilities.
The two that they have there are two very different things you're doing. So.
Yes, they, which is why I was like, I would also kind of want a third and fourth to kind of see like which way is it more towards. Not that I have you played the demo?
Yes, yes.
Okay. I think it's fun.
Yeah, it's very cute.
It's a very adorable game, very nice personality. I mean, calling a spade, and I don't think this is necessarily a bad thing, it is not a hard game.
No.
It is not a difficult game. Though I can already see places where it's like, oh, I can see how it can do like advanced stages or something later on, like with the pastry level. Like there were like some of the cake designs, I'm like, oh, this is easy peasy, just gonna do three straight lines. Then there's others where it's like, you gotta make this star while this cake is moving.
Yeah, that one was tough.
And it's like, wait, what's going on here? But I'm like, yes, okay, I get it, and I can see the feel of it. So to back up, I guess, to just kind of explain what this game is, because I guess this is Nintendo's favorite kind of MO since Mario 64, is like, we're going to put one of our main characters into a giant building and have the building go into different rooms, which are stages and stuff like that.
Yep.
So, Princess Peach.
And that's specifically for these, it's like, because it's Showtime, like she's going to see a play or something, and all the different doors are different stages, like actual stages, where performances are taking place. But
yes, and part of it is, I will say, I mean, I'm a huge fan of Nintendo in general. I do always like their really stupid, nonsensical name and conventions with stuff, because the villain in this is called, I think, Grape, and the villain's like the Sour Bunch.
Oh, I missed that. I didn't catch that part. That's good.
Grape and the Sour Bunch.
Yes. And then, like your allies in this game are called the Sparkles.
So, like, they're just like little star people.
Yeah. Then you get the Sparkles to, you know, that's how you kind. So the gist of the game is that you go into these rooms, and each room, like Chris says, is a play. And the two plays they had is Sword Fighter Peach and Pastry Peach. It's another term for Pastry Peach, but I'm just going to call it Pastry Peach because the other one didn't sound really dirty when they said it.
Say it. I didn't catch that.
It's like patisserie peach or something like that.
I think people just like broke that C term in my head.
How is that? I don't get it. Do they not know the word?
Well, do you not see how people use OC nowadays for everything?
Yeah, but what did they transform it into? I don't understand. Can you explain?
No, I mean, like, when they say it again, that's kind of, it sounds like, but anyhow. So each stage, I mean, so far, you actually start off as just Peach, and Peach's default ability, I mean, she knows two abilities she has really, is she can jump, and then she has an action button. So her default action is she has a ribbon, and you can use the ribbon to interact with stuff in the stage, and, like, you can, like, you know, I think in the first one, you activate like flowers and bushes, and that gives you coins. You can interact with some of the enemies, like that's not enemies. Actually, you can hit the enemies with it, but some of the good guys are also like down in the press, so you hit them with that, and they will turn. They will become happy. I don't know how the logic works in this
game. Yeah, I mean, it everything is dark when you go in, and Peach is waving a ribbon around, and it brightens up the environment and brightens them up, and then eventually the stage brightens up.
Yeah, and then after that, at some point during the stage, you will come across an area where Peach will transform to the whatever for the stage, and that's when you get the ability of that stage. So Sword Fighter Peach, she has a sword, so she can attack, she can dodge. I believe she can parry as well. I think the game mostly asks you to just dodge, which is like you press the jump button at the right time. It does not seem like it is a very, it's not Bayonetta. You do not need pinpoint timing for that. And
no, she was very like, if you press it anywhere near where you might need to dodge, she just like kind of like all your dodges.
Near the enemy. Like I press it sometimes halfway across the room. The game's like, you press the button, that's good enough for us. But yeah, so she'll leap over like them, like the, like there's enemies who have shields, so you can't attack from the front. So she'll leap over behind them, and then you can sword them. And then like the sub, the mini boss of the stage, he has like a shockwave attack that you have to jump over. And then when he does, like his actual attack, you leap behind him and you land on his head, and you attack him. And then the pastry one was very interesting because I didn't know what to expect, and that is more kind of a timing mini game of sorts.
Yep.
So the first part of it is you are making like you're making cookies, but you're just making dough, and you just have to like time the dough so like it gets, if you can get it to a point where it's like rainbow and cookies, and you have to stop it. If not, it builds up in your face. And if you do that, you bake a bunch of cookies, and you have to put it on trays as they're running across. So the whole idea is just kind of a timing thing where it's like you're making these cookies, you got to get it on the trays before they run out.
And there's like a meter behind you, like telling you like how much you need to get to. And there's a timer as well.
Yes. And so that happens. And then the next part, which is the part Chris and I was talking about, is like you have to decorate cakes. So in order to decorate cakes, Peach is on a swing. And some of it is like automatic where like she was moving, some of it the cakes moving, and other ones is neither one. And that's also time, but like they'll give you a pattern to do in the corner. And you have to match the corner, the corner image. So again, some of it is like very straightforward. Then there was other ones, like I said, where it's like, oh, the cake is moving. And the
draw that design.
They have to draw that design. So you're trying to picture this design while the cake's moving. It's just like, wait, okay. It looks like it's a flower, and then I gotta do up some cream in between it. Okay. And I did well, but it's like that was one where, like I
can when you design. Do it. When you do it right, like it transforms into like a cool design or something. When you don't do it right, it just leaves like the buttercream on top of your cake.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so I fucked up the one that was like you had to do kind of like the star thing.
Yeah.
And I got 3 of the 4 or 4 of the 5. And the last one I didn't have it like lined up correctly. So my buttercream was just there. The other pieces had like the nice design to it. Just leaves it like that and it goes up on the shelf.
Yeah. So but then I thought it was fun. I was like, I think Jeff asked us in the group chat, like, what is this? And I think the best I could describe it is it's a bunch of macro games, I should say. They're not mini, because I mean, each stage I would say is probably like maybe 10 minutes.
Yeah. And there looks like there's going to be, because like at the end, when you finish the sword fighter one and then when you finish the pastry one, it says to be continued after each of them. So I imagine you'll go back there.
Yes, because even looking at the trailer, there's some stuff in the trailer that isn't in those two stages. And I think it's like sword, you know, like Mario's like sword dash one, pastry dash one.
Yeah.
And the trailer they had at the, not the end, they had the overview trailer. I think they showed at least 4 bosses because it looks like it's going to be based on Fjords. I imagine it's at least 4 Fjords in that building. But yeah, I think it's a super cute, super adorable game. I don't know the price. I think for 50 I'd be in, or I mean, at least with a voucher. And it's out at the end of the month. But yeah, I mean, it's a short demo, it's 2 stages, but it's worth checking out.
Yeah, I had quite a good time with it, so.
It's 60.
Oh, okay.
That might be one I wait just a little bit on, but it's super cute. Like.
Yeah, the other thing, and this is just fun. I mean, somebody mentioned this. I don't know if it was in our group chat or I saw it on Twitter. I thought it was a great. Maybe it was in that group chat. But somebody said that Nintendo basically made like the Ultimate Barbie game. I'm like, yeah, I can kind of see that. Like, these are all kind of obsessions that Barbie would have. And there's even an element of dress up in there because you can get different patterns for her dress and different ribbons for her hair. I also like that they baked into the story the fact that she lost her crown and how she lost her crown, which I'm like, everybody's like, oh man, she lost her crown. This has to be a story element that we explain. I'm like, I don't think so.
They explain it in the opening cutscene. It just kind of gets blown off and thrown out the door.
Yeah, with the summoned toad.
Yeah. It's neat. I might wait a little bit, but I think I will play it at some point this year. So, Let's see what else we got here. Just real brief, because we talked a little bit about it last week. I played more Dead Island 2. I know, Jeff, you played it for about 7.5 minutes and then deleted it. I'm really enjoying it now that I'm moving in. I think it starts really slowly. And it's not super engaging at first. And it's like, this is kind of dull. But as you start getting like cooler weapons and you start unlocking skills, it becomes fun. Like I now have like this ultimate skill where I click in the two thumbsticks and like I go into this fury mode where I can just start ripping zombies apart. And like, that's super fun. I have like a jump kick that I can do that like throws zombies across the you know, you kick them and they fly across the screen. And now I have like some cool weapons. I'm starting to get guns now. The writing is, I'm finding it to be quite funny. Like there's some really good dialogue and characters. They're all like completely bonkers. It's been a good time. I thought at first maybe like the maps seem a little, and I actually do, I think the maps seem a little small. If you remember from the first Dead Island, like there were two big areas and then the final area, which was like the prison base type thing. That one wasn't too big, but the first two areas, the resort area on the island and then the city, were huge. And this has you kind of moving around between LA, like the different areas of LA, and the surrounding, you know, surrounding counties and stuff. So like the maps seem a little bit smaller, but there's a ton of stuff going on. It's fun and it's on Game Pass, so I've been enjoying it. Any updates from you guys on Balatro? Play more of that?
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah. I guess I would amend something I said, which I think I talked about last week. I was like, I don't know if this is, you know, it's fun, but like I don't know if it has the like the meat on the bone, so to speak, like Vampire Survivors. And the more I don't think I 100% realized what I was doing yet, like playing the game correctly, and the more I've played it, I'm like, yeah, no, this, like, it, I still don't think it has the depth of I don't think I'm gonna be playing this as much as I did play Vampire Survivors, but I don't know, there's like, I don't know, there's just something about it, like when you're going on a good run and you get like, I did not realize I kept buying like the card packs between rounds at the bottom, which don't really help you as much as buying the Jokers, which
well, both do.
I
think what really happens is like you kind of have to take the first Jokers you get to kind of understand what run you're going on, and then that determines what you want to do.
Yeah.
Like today, I had a really good run, and I was so pissed off at it when it ended, where I just had I had a Joker that gave me a multiplier, gave me plus one multiplier for every time I played a certain hand. So that means you kind of hyper focus on a specific type of hand. So yes. I went in on two pairs, so which that meant I also would get the I always forget which is which. The pianists are the ones that upgrade the cards, right? Upgrades the hand.
The what? So
the hand, like the pianists. There's the pianists, and then there's the socios. There's the ones that upgrades like your two pairs.
Oh yeah.
Plus 20 times two, like 30 times four by default. And then there's the Celestials, which upgrades the cards. So I got one where I'm like, okay, I'm going to play, you know, it's two pairs. So every time I played that, like by the end of the run, it was like just 20 by default, just on two pairs, which is a great thing. And then I, you know, like each face card where I get a plus four multiplier, plus 10 chips. And it was doing well. And then I got one which converted like all of the cards in my, not all the cards in my hand, but converted like eight cards in my hands to like just jacks, which means it's very easy to get two pairs or whatever, which is great. And then I get to a boss, and like I think anti-six, which is like You cannot play the same hand twice in this match. And I'm like, God damn it.
I hate some of the debuffs that they give you, dude. It's like, okay, then how... You know what I hate? After every hand dealt, like, any new cards we throw down are gonna be face down. I'm like, okay, so what? Do I have to just junk all those cards or just pray that... Like, that's the worst, dude. Like,
the one they want you to kind of do with that, and it depends on your hand, is, like, you can, you know, sort it by number, sort it by suit. And it kind of gives you an idea of, like, where they might be. But, like, yes, I had one today.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, you get the bottom. You can sort by rank. You can sort by suit. It's like, you know, you can put all the diamonds and spades together. It's like, by default, it's like 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, etc.
I hate having to play cards when I can't see the cards. It's like, fuck you, man. It's not fair.
I had one today that was your first hand. Was played blind, so you didn't see any of your cards. And I'm like, what the hell are you supposed to do with this? I can't read anything. So I dunked 5 cards at random, and then I would just have to play the rest of them out. And it actually worked out in my favor, because I somehow, 2 times in a row, I read it right, and I was able to get full houses on both of them, because I'm like, okay, I kind of tell these suits, and I can kind of tell where these numbers are sitting, that it has, like, I had 2 pairs. I'm like, okay, I'm going to play this blind card in between, and hope that it works or something like that. And it worked in my favor. But yes, is that those stuff I don't like, or the ones where it's like you have to play a single hand? Or like the ones like, oh, get rid of you start with 0 discards. Because I had one of my jokers was like, you got plus 40 chips for every discard you had remaining. It's like, you know, at the start I have 120 for my first hand and it goes. But like, you start with 0, I'm like, oh, that kind of gets rid of part of my scoring right there. So,
yeah,
I'm so excited. I still enjoy it. It's a really fun time waster. And I don't think that's a negative.
No, and to like back up what Earl's saying, it's just like in Vampire Survivors where it's like, all right, I'm going to do a run. And then like, what? All right, maybe the weapon that you want to use is not dropping, and you're like, well, I'm going to have to play it different this round. And that's what makes every round a little different sometimes. Same thing with Atro. It's like, you start getting these jokers, and it's like, okay, now I'm incentivized to play this differently. So every game of Blatro feels a little different. Boy, was I upset, Earl, when I had the best set of jokers. Like, I had one that, like, it would flip between plus 4 multi, plus 6 multi, plus 20, whatever, and just,
random joke, yes.
Yes. And, you know, I have that. I had all these different multipliers. Like, I was crushing, dude. And then I think I got to Annie 6, and I failed, because I think it was, like, the cards down thing. But, like, I was like, man, I'm never going to have a better run than this, like, at least in terms of, like, the joke I had were amazing, dude. And I was like, I'm going to beat this game right now. Like, I'm going to get through the 8, yeah. You know, antes.
The one thing that one of the strategies I've learned is, like, I've learned, because what I used to do is I used to just buy jokers when I had the money, but I've learned, like, okay, they need to synergize. Like, I had one joker where I, anytime you pay the 10 and 4, you get a plus 4 multi. But you can also, I have, like, an even number, and the even number would give plus 4, but it also re-trigger that. So you'd get, like, okay, that's a good one. You focus on 10s and 4s. So I'm like, that's when I go into the shop, and I'm like, I'm going to open the cards. I'm like, do I get a 10 and a 4? Because I need more combinations of those 10s and 4s. And, like, finding out, like, what jokers work well with the others, because there's some where it's, like, they work, but, like, I had one amazing hand a few weeks ago where it was, like, every face card that you played got re-triggered once. And then I had another joker. It was like every number card is treated as a face card. It's like almost every card I played was treated as a face card, which meant that it would go through this process for all of the cards. And that's
those
big hands. Like, there's a joker that's like, I think it's like, it gives you bonus points if your hands are less than 3 cards. I'm like, I like big hands. Like, because I mean, by default, my head is don't poker, full house, a straight, a flush. That's kind of what you aim for.
Yeah.
Like, don't go for like those 3. Like, you have to really work to make 2 or 3 cards worth it. Like, you can get to a point, but like,
well,
that's later on in the run.
It's amazing how, like, with the right jokers, you could win a fucking round with one, like a pair. Like, you go from zero to enough to beat the round just because of the jokers that you have. Like, yeah. And just playing a very small, normal hand.
It's one of those things that I love about... again, it's one of those things that I love about the game. It's also one of those things, like, you have to wrap your head around, because, like, so much of my head at times is like, oh, I want to go for the best hand in poker, but I bought two or three jokers, which are kind of counterintuitive to that. Like I said, at some point, like, running pairs made more sense to me than a full house or a flush, because it's like the pairs will get me more by default,
yeah.
And then they, like, and your mind starts. So it's a really great game, really it fun is. Experience.
Like, I honestly, like, again, feel like I was selling it short last week, because I played a little bit and I liked it, but like, I guess I didn't realize, I just hadn't put enough time in to realize. It's just like the first time, like, I hate to keep going back to this, but it's a good example to make them understand since they haven't played this yet. It's like the first round or two you play a Vampire Survivors, you're like, oh, that's pretty cool, but like, I don't see the big deal. And then it like grows on you and you're like, oh yeah, this is amazing. I recommend it highly to Chris and to Tony. And you don't have to be a poker player to enjoy it. You just have to know what poker hands are.
It's $15, right?
Yeah.
I think I'm gonna pick it up for my trip out your way in 2 weeks. So
perfect on the go game for sure.
Yeah.
Might be worth it.
Not video games, but I went to this event with a friend on Saturday to play the new Star Wars card game, Star Wars Unlimited, which I guess either came out yesterday or comes out Friday, so tomorrow. Have you guys ever played Magic or no?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So it's that type of... It's that type of game where
there's like mana to tap.
Kind of. You have what are called, they call them resources, and you can play any card as a resource. It becomes one. So you start out the game, I guess you pull seven cards, you have to play two down that are, they become your resource, so that's your bank. And then every round you can there's multiple things you can do, but you can like keep building on that. So just like in Magic, where you're like adding stuff for mana, you have to, like, if you have three, that's the highest value card you can play. Like, you need, if you need three resources, that's what you can play. And there's like this component where you have a base, you have a leader, so there are your two cards that are out there. That's how kind of how you build your deck. There's different things that, like, I just call them colors because that's what they were. It was red, black, and green was what I was playing as. And so, like, your cards have those colors, and you need an amount of resources that match that color. So if you have three resources and you have a red base, you can play that. But if you have a blue card, you have to double it. So and you don't have any blue in your base or whatever. So you would have to double that to play that card. So I don't know why you would. I think you would just build a deck around whatever leaders and bases you're running. And then there's like a space component and a ground troop component on either side. And they can attack the bases or they can defend. It was pretty neat. People like that play card games, though, are like super into playing card games. They were very patient with me, but it's because, like, I was like, dude, I have not played a card game since I was in high school. Like, that was the last time I played Magic, and it was 25 years ago, man. Like, they were like, oh, welcome back. I'm like, I don't know if I'm back, but this is fun right now. Like, so it was cool. The art on the cards is neat. These people all have, like, they sleeve all their cards. I'm, like, just playing them out, like, on the... Just like playing the cards, I have no protection on them. It's like whatever. They all have dice to as markers and shit, and it was neat. My one friend wants to continue playing, so maybe I'll, like, now that I have a deck, maybe I'll buy a pack or two every once in a while to add shit to it. But kind of cool. It's just something different to play, and was different to go experience. I've not been in that environment in quite some time, so. And both of my friends that went with us, they were like, that was weird. Like, these people were like really intense. I'm like, but I would assume if you're like spending the amount of money that these people do, that like you probably are pretty intense. Like, that's your thing. So, you guys play anything else this week?
I tried a new game.
Yeah.
Inculinati.
Probably pronouncing that fun.
It's on Game Pass. The basic premise of this game is that you are facing off against your opponent and you're like drawing these little figures on this parchment and like moving them around, and they are fighting. You'll have like there's a couple of different ways of playing it, but the most basic way is you have your own like representative, your like totem or whatever, on the parchment, and your opponent has one as well, and you're trying to like draw these little figures in an effort to either kill the other guy's totem or like push it off into the abyss so they die. It kind of sounds like an interesting premise. As the match takes place, there's like somebody is like writing down like what's happening on top of the parchment, so there's like this little story being told on the top, which is kind of cute, cool. Yeah. And the art style is very like medieval, illuminated manuscript type deal. So the characters all look really cool, and the stuff that's, you know, painted onto this manuscript look fun. The actual gameplay is kind of boring in one note. AI sucks at the game, which is problematic. Like, for instance, if you put like a barrier next to an enemy little drawn guy, they'll keep attacking the barrier that they could just walk right past. They'll try to kill the barrier as opposed to doing something constructive. It's just kind of weird to watch like them make move after move that doesn't mean anything. Which meant that like I played this game for like 7 hours, and I won all of the rounds except one. And the one round I lost was because my cat jumped onto my keyboard and skipped the turn of my one guy who I needed to move like one space so he wouldn't die.
Damn cat coming in, messing everything up.
So, it's kind of fun to look at. It's kind of cool. I think it actually launched on Game Pass last year in like early access. And then they, like, I started playing it because there were achievements now.
Mm.
Except I played the game for 7 hours and did not earn a single achievement.
Oh, wow.
And then I started looking at, like, the achievement percentages of people who played the game. Like, I completed the tutorial, but for some reason, the tutorial achievement unlock has only unlocked for, like, 5% of players.
So they're bugged on Xbox, because I'm looking at them on Steam and I'm like, I don't know, there's like 75% of people complete the tutorial here. Like,
yeah. So, I mean, I enjoyed it. It's fun. It's got some cool stuff going on. I don't know that I will go back to it because, again, it's I love winning, but, you know,
it's too much winning. I get that. Like, if there's no challenge in the winning, it becomes less fun.
It's like when you're like, one of your opponents is literally death, and they're like, all right, I'm beating the shit out of death. All right, where do we go from here? Like, what? Yeah. Where does this get better? It doesn't.
I've defeated the hardest. you play anything else, Tony?
I played obviously more of Helldivers 2.
Oh yeah, we did. We got together over the weekend. I'm sure you played more since then. But
I don't think I have actually. But that game is still fantastic. And they're adding mechs now. I want to play in a mech. So
they added mechs. They added fire tornadoes.
Yeah, they added like weather effects that are bad that you want to stay out of.
Real quick, so when Tony and I were playing with our buddy Walt and Sean over the weekend, I don't know what difficulty you guys put it on. I think we're planning on maybe like challenging or something to start, and then that last one though, whoever set it up jumped it up to a higher difficulty.
I think that was challenging on the last one. We started on medium and then switched to challenging.
It was brutal. Like, we're just getting ripped apart.
That was actually a really epic match though, because like it came down to the very end. Like, we needed to kill the two Bile Titans, right?
I don't remember us. Maybe I don't know. I just kept reviving everybody because I wasn't very effective with killing anything. So running away and just reviving.
I hadn't realized until we played together the difference there is between like people who've played a while and have like gotten good guns and good things to call in. Like, if you haven't spent some time and leveled up in those things, you're not very useful. Like, you can't, like, right. I was calling in like orbital bombardments that were like hitting like huge portions of the map and killing everything.
I'm like tossing a little like meter out and it's just like one shot, boom, like, it's a precision strike, I hit nothing.
Yes. And like our two attacks have the same cooldown. It's not the same. Yeah. It's just not the same.
Like, fortunately, I think I had just unlocked, like, it seems like it's like I would call it like a 50 caliber sniper rifle.
Yeah.
But it shoots like explosive rounds. So I was a little effective with that, but you have to be from range. Like, you're not shooting that thing up close. That was something Sean and I also were struggling with. Sean, he's played way more. He's like level 17 or something like that. So he has like a bunch of cool shit. But both of us were struggling with the, like, we want to aim down sights with guns that have a scope. But in this game, like, you're going to run through your ammo and you're going to get swarmed. So you need to switch to another gun that has ammo. And in that case, like, you'll switch to your pistol or maybe like your primary, like as a shotgun or something. And then you're shooting down the sights and it's like, no, stop. Like,
no,
I don't,
that's not what I want anymore. No.
But yeah, the game's a ton of fun. So yeah, the mechs will be fun, I think. And I think there's like ATVs or something Walt said as well. Yeah. Like, you can get them to drop down. It's neat. We definitely got more rewards playing the higher difficulty, but
yeah. Oh, you get way more. It's not even close.
It was certainly very ineffective.
Yes, but the matches also. I don't even know if the matches take longer. They just feel longer because there's so much more going on, and you're under pressure the whole time.
Well, I think they probably do take longer just from the simple fact that there's more side objectives to go do side missions and. In like when you're playing on the lower levels, like they may have a side mission, but that's it. Like, there's not three of them. There's not two sub main objectives. And
there's also like things like the evac take longer the higher level.
Yeah.
Like, if you're doing challenging, the evac's taking like 4 minutes. If you're doing like easy, it's taking like 30 seconds.
And they're not near each other, right? You'll finish a mission on one side of the map, and then your evac is all the way on the other side.
Oh, that's
of the
always
map.
So frustrating, especially when you're like almost out of reinforcements. So it's like, oh, don't die because we're going to be without you the whole time.
Like, just run. Like, as you guys were like, we're all dead. Just run. Just keep going.
There was definitely one match where I was dead. I can't remember if I was playing with you or somebody else, but I was dead and the other two people were waiting for the evac to arrive and they both died. And
oh, no.
There was one reinforcement that came up at that point and it was me. So I get dropped in. The entire thing is surrounded by guys and it's literally just me like running away for like 30 seconds from this horde of enemies that I had no prayer of killing and then jumping into the evac just as it left.
That would have been quite cool to watch.
It was very stressful. Like, I'm here, I have no equipment. Here I am with my shotgun and the world. And at that point, like the annoying thing about like the call in mechanic is like at that point I can't even call in, like I have all these strikes and stuff and they're all primed and ready to go, but if I stand still to call them in, I'm gonna fucking die.
Yeah. Sad. And maybe it's quicker on mouse and keyboard, but like I think you still have to stand still, right?
Yeah. No, it's not quicker on mouse and keyboard. it's definitely like, okay, let me go and hit these buttons. And it's so like, it's so hard. Like, all right, like, hold down control and hit, all right, WW3. It's just like, as the world is exploding around you, it's just not.
To explain what you can call things in, you call in reinforcements, you can call in like extra equipment, bombardments and stuff, but to do so you have to put in a code. And so like on controller you hold down like your left bumper and then you put in, it's like left, right, up, down, and like some of them get really long.
Yeah. So some of them are like eight button presses.
And if you mess up, you have to restart it all over again.
Yep.
Like it doesn't just stop at the one you messed up at. It's like, nope, you fucked up and start over. So
nothing happens. Sorry.
There's like a risk reward in getting them done.
It's fine. Like if there's nothing going on, like when I first land, I always like call something in, like I call in my autocannon or like a turret or something just because you're under no pressure. But once that pressure starts, like you're a sitting duck when you're trying to call something in, like you need to be in cover hiding.
Yep. Quite fun. I enjoy fighting the bugs more than the robots.
The robots are harder.
Yeah, and I don't have any equipment right now that can like kill robots.
So. I have heard that if you have like the shield, since the robots shoot at you a lot,
yeah,
the shield is much better. Yeah, that I think that's why the bugs are easier. Like they literally need to touch you to hurt you, or at least be close enough to spit on you.
Yeah.
Whereas the robots can shoot you from far, far away, and they do.
Yeah, the robots are dicks.
They shoot like rockets at you, and like they one-shot you from across the map with a rocket. Like, why am I dead? Oh, I got hit by a rocket.
Yeah, at least when the bugs swarm, you're like, all right, I get it. There's like 15 of them around me. I at least know what killed me. All right, that's Helldivers. Still quite fun. Jeff, you play anything else this week?
Yeah, I got Mario vs. Donkey Kong.
Oh, it's for your birthday. How is that? It's a remake.
How does it
right?
feel to be 12?
Yeah, it's, you know, I don't know really like what there is to say about it. Like it's, you know, y'all familiar with what it is, right? Like it was a pretty great little GBA game that came out in 2004 for probably $30. I don't know how great I feel about paying $50 for it 20 years later. It's fine. It's a fine game. Like it's decent. Like it's a fun little puzzle platformer, but like I don't know. I've probably played it for like 2-3 hours. I'm probably almost done with it. And yeah, I don't know what else to say. It's fine. Like it's enjoyable, but it's like I can't recommend anyone like go out and buy it. Like
spend $50 on it.
Yeah, like
but if you get that voucher and get it with Princess Peach.
I think it's a bad use of the voucher. I really like after like I did it, I was like, oh, I fucked up because you know, I could have used the voucher, I guess, for Princess Peach or whatever, anything else, instead of wasting it on a $50 game. You're not getting the most bang for your buck. You want to do like
the $60
Tears of the Kingdom plus something else where it's like, it really makes it worth it.
Yep. You got to be smart about these things.
So what was the voucher? Was it $100 or $120?
Yeah, the vouchers are $100.
So I guess you buy two $50 games. Breaking even. If you buy two $60 games, you're saving $20.
Yeah, got it. I can't remember what I used the other game. What it was, man. It might have been Tears of the Kingdom.
I thought Tears of the Kingdom was $70, but I guess if you do $70, like I did Tears of the Kingdom and I did Wonder?
So yeah, and Tears of the Kingdom and Pikmin, which, yeah, I made like $30 value out of that, right?
Yeah.
And then I did, now that I think about it, I did Super Mario Brothers Wonder and this. I think this is just a, yeah, so I made $10 of savings. And yeah, bad use of voucher. I just wanted something to play on my birthday, something new that wasn't like something I played 18 million fucking times. And it's fine. Again, it's an okay game, but it definitely feels just like here is something we could put out in the month of February on the you know, last year of this system's life cycle. You know what I mean? Like, it's when you get the weird, you know, you get stuff like this, and then you get the weird shit like Princess Peach, where it's like, okay, what is this?
And you're not saving sure the big guns. To go with.
Well, yeah, yeah. That's honestly, they're probably both just kind of okay. I don't know. Princess Peach has a problem for me that I just realized. Where like, I just look at it and I'm like, maybe that's fun. I'm sure it's not terrible. It comes out the same day as Dragon's Dogma 2, which is like gigantic RPG that I get way more out of than Princess Peach. So,
yeah, I think that might be why I wait on. My weight on it a little bit because there's other things coming out this month. So,
like,
I'm hoping I like Dragon's Dogma. I'm gonna do it just to have something new to play.
Millennia, you could move to strategy games now that you like good RPGs.
No, I'm good. I'm good on that.
Earl, you play anything else?
No, more Diablo. I don't think anything else. I don't know why. Maybe it's not back. I did get the itch to try Monday Night Combat, and for some reason I couldn't install it on my Xbox, so I've tried that again. But I don't know. Something about that MOBA came to mind recently, and I'm like, I really enjoyed that game. Really, really enjoyed that game.
Did you get to play any of it? Or?
No. Wait. No. Because I don't think I was here. I wasn't here last week.
No.
Did I talk about Paid Up?
No.
It's on Game Pass now, which is, and it's kind of a, I don't want to say roguelike, because it's not a roguelike in the way I think of a roguelike. It's a randomly generated, kind of Overcooked, where you are running a restaurant, and, you know, you prepare food, and you serve the food, and you make money, and with the money, you upgrade your kitchen, you upgrade your restaurant, and stuff like that. Where it differs from Overcooked for somewhat, because Overcooked, for the most part, is really about kind of kitchen management. It's really about making sure you get the pizza ready, get the burgers ready. This has some of that, but it's not as complicated. Like, for example, to cook steaks, you just put them in the oven, and you cook them either rare, medium, or well. I want to kick everybody who orders them well out my restaurant, but I can't do that because it's a game. Whatever.
They're broken people.
That's right.
Broken people.
They got to design better AI than that. It's just not working.
But yeah, that's what you have to do. And then for salad, it's like for salad, you just cut up lettuce and you cut up tomatoes and then you put them on a plate and you serve it. So like there's some stuff similar to Overcooked. But again, I feel like Overcooked is so much about, like, okay, you got to get this out. You got to get this out in order. So yeah, like, you're managing the pot. You're managing the stove. This doesn't have that so far. Like, there was stuff that your restaurant at the starters for now only does one thing to start with. So, like, you pick your starter. So, like, right now, we mostly focus on steaks because they're easy, or salads. And then you kind of pick the layout of the restaurant. So, like, the restaurant tends to have a kitchen, and then it has a serving area. I'm playing with a friend, so my friend runs the dining area. I do the kitchen. So, you know, you're preparing food, and then somebody's running out to the tables. And then, like, usually later on, as you progress, you rank up your restaurant with stars. So you can get 1 star, 2 stars, 3 stars. After every star, you can kind of, like, you get a chance to do a perk. So, like, a perk might be, like, oh, your restaurant goers have more patience. But you need to, you know, like, they don't tip as well, or you're gonna start to offer I think what they was like, you can have a steak that you can offer a tomato on top of, and that would be a side. So that would be the second dish you would be able to prepare. Like yesterday, we got a normal steak, and then we got thin cut steaks, which are, they just cook faster. So you have to better manage that on the stove, that they will cook like maybe in a third of the time it would take a cook a normal steak. The pizza is the one that I had issues with, because the pizza is really weird, because you have to like do the dough into a ball, and then I think you have to put like oil on it, then you roll it out, then you have to grate the tomato sauce, and then the cheese, and then put it in the oven. And it was very confusing in that instructions, because like the thing that it does that I don't think overcooked does this is like a food is a food. So like if you have tomatoes, you cut a tomato, it's sliced tomatoes. If you can keep on cutting it, it becomes tomato sauce. So, like, there's no, like, when you make salad, you only need to do the first step. If you hold the button down too long, it becomes sauce and it becomes useless to you. The same thing's here, where it's like, you would think the pizza dough rolled out would be good enough. But you have to do the ball first, grease it, then roll it out into a pizza, and then do everything. And we cannot figure that out for the longest time. But for the most part, it's a fun experience. I've been enjoying it. It's not as good as Overcooked to me, but it is still fun.
Neat. I do like the idea of like having, like, you know, front and back of house management. Yeah. That's neat.
And I'm curious. I would be curious to see, because I think it's four players. Yeah, it's four players. I'd be curious to see how that, like, what changes with like four players, because like, does it become easier, harder? Does the layout become bigger? Like right now, what I think with the setup we have, where one person works the kitchen and one person works the front, works out. But then if you add two more people, what are they doing? Yeah.
I mean, maybe you could expand your kitchen and have more people prepping food and more servers.
Well, yes. Okay. The other thing I was going to say that's slightly different from Overcooked. It's because part of it is still the restaurant, and you have to manage lines. Like people, like Overcooked, I think people kind of come in and you make their food and they go. Like this one, like people leave, they will leave dirty dishes, so you have to bust the tables, and people will line up. If the people line up too long, they will get mad and they will leave. If anybody gets upset at you, if they, you know, if their food takes too long, if they take too long to sit, one person is an automatic fail. So you need to make sure everybody's happy. Like, again, you can expand it in different ways. Like yesterday we got our first waiting area. Like your waiting area means that like we had three tables. If the three tables are full, instead of doing a line, one party could go into that area. So it gave you a bit more time. But like with that, it also kind of becomes a headache, because then you're managing a lot more parties. Where like if you had two or three, it's a bit easier to manage those tables, though that I make it longer. But when you have like four of them, it's like harder to, like, okay, who wants what, who's getting what, when, who do, and then that you can't, like, you have to serve the food within close proximity of each other with a table. Like if you serve like somebody their steak, and then like 20 seconds later you serve somebody else their food, that person waiting might get angrier because the other person has their, which to be fair, it's kind of how people react in real life to restaurant orders.
Yeah, you see somebody getting their food when you order first.
Yeah,
get a little annoyed.
Yeah, but yeah, it's a fun game. I've been enjoying myself.
Yeah. And you said that's on Game Pass.
Game Pass, yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, that's it for what we've been playing. Was a couple things of news that I kind of wanted to touch on. Warner Brothers, they are doubling down on free-to-play and live service games. This is just mind-boggling to me, because they just released Suicide Squad, which is
critically panned. Bombed.
Yes.
Awful.
Critically panned. Fans don't seem to like it. Does not seem like it is performing well. There doesn't seem to be a whole lot of players. And last year, you know, despite us not discussing it a ton, that Harry Potter game did incredibly well for them. Was the best-selling game of 2023. And that is a single-player game.
No, okay, and I could be mistaken. I don't think they walked it back exactly, but I thought something came out today where people were saying that, not that it was misinterpreted, but it wasn't necessarily somebody in charge of gaming. It was somebody talking to like Goldman Sachs, who was just talking like basically jargon.
I think it was the CEO. I'm pretty sure.
Okay. I followed that. I'm like, this is really dumb. But like they're also, you know, relaunching multiverses this year. But like it's weird because like you just announced like that Wonder Woman game. Mortal Kombat's still one of their big bread and butter franchises. It's a weird, weird stance to take.
I don't know what the fuck they're doing over there.
Yeah, it was the WB Discovery CEO.
Yeah, JB Perrette.
So it was literally the guy in charge of making the decisions who said this.
Zaslav is in charge of all of it, Earl, but this guy is in charge of like the Warner Brothers Discovery Gaming Division, I guess.
Oh, okay.
Well, you know what it is. He sees all of the press that PAL World and Helldivers 2 have gotten, and he's like, this is where we need to be. Like, these games are cheaper, they're live service. We had the right idea, we just didn't execute it very well. The problem is they're shitty at executing those sorts of games. So if they try, they're just going to fail again.
I was going to say, I mean, it's not just them. I mean, I feel like a lot of the industry tried that and have failed time and time again.
There's only so much space for those. Like, for every Helldivers, there is 40 other third-person shooter games that are multiplayer that you could play on Xbox and PlayStation and Steam that don't have a player base like that.
Yeah. There's a reason that these games succeed, and it's because they're exceptional. Like, you hop into these games, you play them, you have a fantastic time that you don't normally have in other games. You have just delivered a game that proved that you don't know how to do that. But you have built all of these other games that people think are awesome that just don't happen to be that kind of game. This is the part, like, realize what you're good at. Do what you're good at. Don't lean into other stuff just because it happens to be, like, the thing of the moment.
I think these people on top have no idea what the fuck they're doing.
I mean, yes, that goes without saying.
They don't understand the products that they make. They don't understand.
No.
They understand the market. The problem is people understand the market trends because like, you get these facts and figures like this is doing really well. The problem is you're looking at a snapshot of like, calling a spade, you're looking at a snapshot of 2017, 2018, stuff like Overwatch and Fortnite becoming big, and folks developing these games. When that moment passed,
every single attempt to be like that since then has failed. All of them, like universally, there hasn't been a single success story. But let's lean into it, because Fortnite.
It made money, and it's insane.
So, good luck, Warner Brothers.
Good luck with failure. We will be looking at how Warner Brothers is selling off their gaming division like 3 or 4 years from now. We'll be like, what happened? Well, they made that great Harry Potter game that lots of people liked and sold super well. Why didn't they keep doing that?
To be fair, I think that was, I mean, they've been trying to sell off their game division for 2 or 3 years now. So that would,
I mean, they look like they're trying to sell off everything.
Yes. Like, I mean, like, it came out like they were in talks with Paramount to buy them already. It just got sold like 2 years ago.
Yep. It seems like Zaslav or whatever the fuck his name is, like he is there to make them as lean as possible so that somebody else can gobble them up, which is a shame. Ooh.
So lean that they starve to death.
The other big piece of news, we talked briefly about this last week, because I kind of talked about Yuzu and Ryujin, Switch emulation, and you know how you can add mods and stuff. Well, Tony, you mentioned last week that Nintendo had sued the company behind Yuzu that was out there.
Yes.
In a amazingly fast turn of events, Yuzu has settled with Nintendo $2.4 million, I believe. And
which is probably all the money that Yuzu has.
Yeah.
I mean, the money's probably not Nintendo's concern. I assume it's the next part.
No, it's the part where basically they shut it down. It's can tough. You can no longer download it from the official Yuzu pages. There are plenty of the problem with this stuff. It just proliferates everywhere. But Yuzu itself has shut down. And the more kind of like look into it, the people that were running that emulation project kind of dickbags. Like they had a Patreon up. They were asking people to support them financially to the point of they were getting $30,000 a month for this through Patreon. And it seems that the big thing that kind of turned them to go, yeah, we're going to settle, is that Nintendo had somebody infiltrate their Discord and found out that the devs, the people running this thing, basically were just straight up pirating stuff in the open, and before release, before Pokemon came out, they had it. Before Tears of the Kingdom came out, they had it. They were sharing it amongst themselves, like actively, flaunting their piracy. So. That's gone. Goodbye, yeah. Yuzu.
They wanted to avoid that discovery, which would have like made each individual person culpable, and not just like to Nintendo, but like they're committing crimes at that point. Like doing stuff that you're not supposed to do. I don't know. The funniest thing about this story is for me is completely personal. So, I think it was about 2 weeks ago. My 10-year-old. Who's super interested in like modding and emulation. It's like, can we download Yuzu? Cause it sounds super cool and I want to try it out. I'm like, I think downloading an emulator for a system that's being like put out right now is probably not the best idea. I think they're probably doing some shady stuff. The very next day was the day of the Nintendo lawsuit.
I mean, they were doing some very shady stuff. We talked about this a bit in our group chat, and I think Earl, you kind of mentioned it. Like, nobody that is actively working on an emulator for a system that is still selling,
yes,
is doing it for game preservation. They love to throw that one around. Like, we're preserving it. What games are you preserving? Like, they're there. You can buy them.
They're
there.
You can literally go to the store and buy them right now. They're not like.
Go to the store. I mean, you could buy them on your Switch at home.
You don't have to go anywhere. Exactly. I mean, I do think that some of the stuff they were doing there is like really neat. Like the ability to mod the games directly. And that stuff's really cool. But also, if you are actively like, hey, we have Tears of the Kingdom, it's not out for another week, and then you're using that to promote your Patreon.
And I think, yes, Nintendo, the people have their beef with Nintendo, which is fine, which is fair. Nintendo, for the most part, has been fairly consistent. They will mostly kind of be for your own until you start making money.
Yeah.
Yes.
They haven't gone after Dolphin.
I am all for Dolphin. Like, you can't get those systems anymore.
Yeah.
And if you buy them, you're buying them from an individual. Nintendo's not making any sort of profit or anything. Like,
they shut down the Wii store. Like, it's
that stuff is all gone. Like, this is the only way you can get those things now.
But as far as I know, Dolphin's not selling the emulator, so Nintendo.
Right.
Like, people are always like, yes, Nintendo, like, they will. They have people will do fan games of Pokemon and comedy, like, oh, Mario and Epic. Like, sure, whatever. The minute you start charging, when Nintendo's like, okay, you know what?
Yes, that's ours. That's the, you can't do that.
And then just the fans of these, like, they're just losing their fucking mind. Like, Nintendo sucks. I'm never gonna buy a Nintendo game again. Like, you weren't already.
Steal all their games.
Like, right. Like, you weren't buying their games to start with. Like, let's be real here. And, you know, whatever. I have the emulator here, and maybe I will, you know, dump a game or two and see how, you know, mess with modding, but the whole thing is fucking stupid. these people are so dumb.
Internet.
The internet. In short, that's just basically what it comes down to.
Well, I burned ages ago not to say anything about emulation, at least on social media. I'm not against it. I dabbled in emulation ages ago. I still do. I think my Wii was modded. I modded my Dreamcast. I'm looking to mod at my Xbox. But for me, that's more like one of the reasons I want to do it is like I had the itch to play X-Men Legends and Everything or Nothing. Those are two games that are not in print anymore and aren't playable on any of my current systems.
Yeah,
I mean, I could hook up my old systems, but like at some point, you don't want to have like a dozen systems hooked up to your TV with four ports.
And like at the end of the day, you know why you're doing it. Like, it's not, you're not doing it because you're trying to preserve games. You're doing it, you want to play those games, and that's the easiest way to do it.
I'm not gonna sit here and be like, I'm not running a museum. I'm not running a nonprofit. Like, if you want to preserve this, there is a video game museum in Rochester, New York. If you want to help preserve games, give money to them, help them. Because like when people say preservation of games, they aren't talking about like, oh, we're like, make, it's like, no, we want to make sure we can download it. Because like the thing with preservation of game, especially in this regard, is we've seen time and time again of the major, not even publishers, of just like any, Nintendo has been really good about preserving their games. Like, I don't think we've ever had a Nintendo game that's gone missing. Like, you know, like the case with, I think Silent Hill 2 and 3, when they did the remasters, like they lost the original cut of those games, which is why
they're
so funky. There was it Tales of Mana or Secret of Mana? One of those games had a remake. And recently, and they had to go to Nintendo because Nintendo saved the original source code for their Super Nintendo version that they could then use. Now, is it always easily accessible to the public? No. That does not mean it's not preserved. It means that it's preserved in a way you don't like, but it is being preserved. Like, there are parts of gaming that will disappear. License games don't exist anymore because you don't have those licenses or those companies don't exist anymore. That's a whole different beast as well. But it's not like people use preservation as like this catch-all, but like you're not preserving Tears of the Kingdom. That's not going to disappear. You're not preserving GTA. You're not going to preserve Madden. Like, those games are there. Yes,
and you're not even preserving, like, you know, you mentioned X-Men Legends, like Dead to Rights. These are like games that are old and you can't buy anymore, like unless you go hunt them down in a secondhand store. You're not preserving them because you're not a museum.
Like I said, there is a video game museum in Rochester. I would say donate to them, like help them build up the
collection. Exactly.
Like, it's a fantastic museum. It's a nonprofit. I'm sure they will take your money and, you know, like, they will find ways to preserve those games and actually preserve them in a way that, like, it's accessible for people to go out and look into them, get some history, get some factoids about them. That's really what preservation is. I mean, yes, it sucks. I complain about there are movies that I want to watch that don't exist on any streaming service and stuff like that, or physical media, but they still exist if some company wants. Like, this isn't the old Doctor Who. These aren't like these games aren't also in a fire at Nintendo headquarters that you need to like go and rescue them.
Maybe they are.
And again, it would be so much easier case to make if it was not an actively available console, but an actively available online shop that you could still buy.
Yeah.
I'm going to say 99%. Like, yes, Mario 3D, you know, Mario 3D All-Stars. Okay, fine. Give you that. Mario 35, I'll grant you that. But like, most of the library is still accessible to the common person.
Yeah. And, you know, when your big selling point was, you know, we're going to be able to have Tears of the Kingdom, or we have it. You ask
we have
the
it.
Right people.
It's not out yet, but you know,
not a great thing. So, goodbye, Yuzu. And that I really do think that Patreon is what really drew Nintendo's ire, because they have not, and maybe they will. Maybe next week we're going to find out they've gone after Ryujin, the other Switch emulator, but they specifically went after Yuzu and shut them down. So
goodbye, Yuzu. Yeah. Hardly used you.
True.
That sounds oddly sexual.
You guys see there's some sad breaking news?
No.
Yes.
Akira Toriyama, who is the creator of Dragon Ball, and he did the art for like Dragon Quest and Chrono Trigger, he's died at 68.
That is a shame. Jeff bringing the mood down with Death Note.
Hey, well, it's news. That's like
it is
breaking
news. That
news.
Is.
Breaking, yeah. And you know, yeah, he's.
A and big it's not deal. News about people doing terrible things. It's about people who did good things who are now no longer with us.
Sadly, yeah.
He worked on Dragon Quest too, right?
Yeah.
I saw
mean,
that.
He's a huge influence on the gaming industry. I mean, let's be honest. Half of the JRPG protagonists are probably influenced by Dragon Ball and anime. I mean, it's like I said on Twitter, like, not even the biggest anime fan, and even I knew the guy's name and his legacy. So young too.
Yeah, it is. What's the thing? If you told me that when I was like 15, I'd be like, 68 sounds 68. Super young now.
It does.
Wait, I just saw like Mike Drucker posted about he created, you know, the look for the slime in Dragon Quest.
And I want to say the protagonist, or he did. He's done video game. I think he's done a recent one as well.
I mean, I'm assuming he was the lead artist on like Chrono Trigger and Dragon Quest and stuff.
Yeah, I think he did all the character art for that, and he also did a
Blue Dragon.
Yeah, Blue Dragon, the Xbox exclusive back in the day.
Aww.
And I think there was also a DS game, a Blue Dragon DS game.
Iconic art style and creator of Dragon Ball.
Yeah, which, I mean, again, you don't know anime, you know Dragon Ball.
Yeah, I've never watched it. You know, so.
Yeah, but you know.
I know, yeah. When I saw it, I'm like, this is a big deal. I should bring this up on the podcast. This sounds like a big deal. So
yeah, it's like one of those things that goes hand in hand. I'm sure there's people who will continue with legacy, but like, I believe he was like the individual writer and artist, or at least artist on the manga. And that's, as far as I know, it's still going on. So I'm curious to see. I'm sure people follow his influence, but I'm curious to see how they continue that onwards.
Manga. I don't see. I mean, he's credited on the anime. Here it is. Yes, Dragon Ball Super, which is still going. He didn't do a lot on it. Some of the storyboards and dialogue on it, but it's his original concept and story outline. So. So, sad day for, you know, for that, for art in general, I guess. I guess that's about it.
Well, we didn't talk about the big controversy of the week. The big shame secret.
What did I miss here, Earl?
Did you hear that Dragon Dark news? Oh, you're running at 30 frames per second on consoles.
I did.
Oh, no.
I don't care.
Honestly speaking, I always just like whenever I hear people say stuff like that, and I'm sure there are legit people who can't play games under 60 frames per second, which I still find really funny because you can't see in 60 frames per second in your whatever. I mean, you watch a movie on TV, so the 24 frames per second, it does not make you sick.
I can't tell. I personally could not tell. I can just tell when the frame rate is inconsistent.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
So it could be 30, it could be 60. I don't care if it's solid frame rate.
It's solid, yes. You can tell when it's choking. But like the way people talk about it, like the dog was murdered when a game isn't 60. And I'm just always like, I'm so happy I do not care about any of this. And I'm sure somebody's going, like, I've had people try to explain to me why it's important, and I'm sure it is important in some regards, but like, it's one of those things where like, it's kind of the same entirety I take with movies. If you know what you're aiming for and you nail that, I'm okay with that. If you're a 30 frames per second game that it's built for 30 frames per second, fine. If you're a 60 frame per second game that's built for that, fine. Like Jeff said, it's like when it like jumps between them that I'm like, not even between them, like when it's like diffs, you can kind of tell sometimes when like game slash chugging and it can't keep up.
Well, I mean, normally when it's dipping to like 15 or like something so low where you can see the frames.
Count.
Right, because normally when it dips, you don't even notice. Like, so I've been playing Helldivers on my computer, and I don't normally have the frame rate tracker up, but again, my cat likes to step on my computer sometimes, and it'll pop up, and I'll be like, oh, normally it runs at like 110, but sometimes when it really starts to chug, it goes down to 90. Oh, darn. Damn. Look at it chug. Like, what is this? What's happening?
The only thing visually that I could see, and I'll swear by for the rest of my life, is on TVs if the motion smoothing is turned on.
But that's different. But
that's an effect that's like affecting the actual.
You talk to any older person who has this turn on, you know, their TVs, they're just like, I don't see what you're talking about. You're like, are you fucking serious, dude? How do you not see that? It looks unreal.
Now here's the funny thing, and here's the irony of it. That is the opposite problem with gaming. Because what they're doing is actually adding frames. So it's like taking a 20, and that's what gives it that weird soap opera look where it's like, because like what happens is the foreground is done at a different speed than the background. And it's so weird. But yes, I've gone to friends and I'm like, I'm turning this off because this looks like crap. My head, I can't take it. So yes, I'm hypocritical because I make video games, don't notice. TVs, I'm like, this is awful.
They honestly need to pass a law that like TVs cannot come with that turned on by default. It has to be something that like motion smoothing should be like a choice that you opt into because you like it for whatever reason. Like, because doing it the other way is like a crime against older generations. They need to fucking pass a law.
Yeah. But okay, there was one bit of actual news that I did want to touch on before we wrap.
Mm-hmm.
I think you folks watched it. The Fallout TV trailer that came out today.
I did watch it. It looks good. Let me ask you, is Walton Goggins the mutant guy that's like the cowboy? I forgot what are they called. Raiders or
ghouls?
Ghouls.
Right. Is Walton Goggins the ghoul with the cowboy hat in it? Like,
I believe he is.
Yeah, because they show him like he's doing like
he is credited as the ghoul.
Okay, the ghoul. I thought that was him. I thought that was him because like. He's in the trailer as himself, like doing like the speech, like on TV or whatever at the beginning. But then, like they keep showing this ghoul. I'm like, that's him, dude. That's fucking. It's impossible to tell because of all the makeup. But like, I was just like watching like his physique and the way he, like his face. I'm like, that's him. That's got to be him. That makes me excited because he's an awesome fucking actor. And the show looks awesome.
Definitely has the vibe of the games.
Yeah. And looks like they went all out with it.
It looks good. My only qualm, and not really a qualm, because I think of Fallout being a bit more tongue-in-cheek, so I was expecting a bit more humor. But other than that, I think the costume looks great. I think it's really fun. That drops in April 11th, I want to say, and I think they're doing all episodes at once. I'll be there to watch it.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a go.
I'm going to watch it. I wish they would stop doing it all at once. Like, yeah, it's nice, there's something lost.
I agree with you.
But there's something lost when you do it all at once, because then, like, there's no...
We're going to watch it all, we're going to talk about it the next week, and then we're not going to again until the next season.
Well, there's basically no discourse about a show when it's dropped out at once, because you can't say anything, because you're like, all right... I don't know friends what episode they're on. I'm on episode 6. They might be on the first 2. So, like, there's no discourse about it because of that. When you have the week-to-week thing, it's like something big happens. Everyone talks about it for the whole week. I don't know. I really think you need to bring the weekly model back. I'm not a huge fan of dropping it all at once.
It's nice to watch it. Didn't Amazon do that with...
They did that with Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Yeah.
Reacher. They did that with Incredible. They do it with most of their shows, which is why I think it's noteworthy that this is dropping all at once. It's weird because, like, aside from Netflix, and I think Netflix does it with their reality TV show, but I think Netflix drops all. Though Netflix also does that weird thing now where it's like, here's part one and here's part two. But a lot of streaming services do it weekly now, but I feel like it's a weird mismatch because I personally used to like how Max did it. Where instead of dropping it all at once doing it weekly, it would be like 2 episodes a week. So you get multiple things to talk about, but you still got that, like, okay, there's 2 episodes, and then you still get like that 3, you know, you get the 4 or 5 weeks of prolonged discussion about the show. Where, because like, I think week to week, especially with streaming, a lot of streaming platforms are really bad about promoting something that's already airing. And
yeah,
so you forget about like a good example, and you know, I mean, it was different because it was on HBO, but like, True Detective finished what, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah,
yes. And I feel like that's not like Max isn't promoting that, like, oh, now you can binge the entire series after it finished. And I feel like it was, as far as I can tell, it was mostly well received. And it's a good time. But yeah, like I said, it's the conversation for another day.
Yeah, I mean, we'll revisit this in April. Look of it looks good.
Yeah.
It looks surprisingly good.
Hopefully it hits. But if it doesn't, we'll at least have that to talk about. So all right, we'll be back next week. I don't think there's anything new between now and then, so probably just more of the stuff we've already been playing, and we'll see what news comes out. But and then the week after is when the games start dropping. So
many games.
Did you not get Final Fantasy VII?
I'm in the middle of playing
the predecessor
remake again. I'm on chapter 12 of that. So I will have that, but I don't know if I'll get to it before I go out to Chicago. So
okay.
We will be talking about that, and Dragon's Dogma is not too far out. Alone in the Dark's not too far out. Princess Peach, if any of us get that, not too far out. So
Millennia.
Not sure what that is, Tony. You keep saying that.
It's a 4X game, like Civ.
maybe if I get drunk and depressed, WWE 2K24 is out this week. And I just kind of want to see how much they have to throw out Vince and Brock.
He's in the game, right? But you can't play as Brock.
You can play as him in the history of WrestleMania, because I assume it was too late to change that, but you can't play as him in the actual game, yeah.
Mm. And Vince has been purged.
Apparently, I've been told it's not all of them. Like, he still shows up at WrestleMania 17. That's what I would have been really funny to see, like, Stone Cold just shaking hands with, like, a blurred out face. But, like, yes, I assume it happened way too late for them to make changes. And, like, it also, like, there's a lot of iconic WrestleMania moments with the two of them. So,
yeah.
Awkward.
But yeah, so we'll see if you end up playing that, be interested to hear about it. Those games are always very fascinating.
And buggy, right?
Yeah. It's just, I've heard good things about reviews, but I feel like they always review well, and then people get them, and it's like, that's when everything starts popping up.
Yeah, like, people are, they're fighting inside the ring. Like, their half of their body is underneath the apron, and or the ropes, the physics on the ropes go crazy, and there's some funny stuff that comes out of those games all the time. All right, well, we'll be back next week, maybe with some of that. Jeff, say goodnight.
God bless you, and God bless the United States of America.